Closer Look is a public affairs presentation. Opinions expressed by some of our guests may not reflect the views of K-Love, and some topics aren't suitable for children. K-Love is committed to community. Closer Look continues now with a look at local agencies, events, and issues.
I'm Becky Hansen. This is Closer Look. My guest today is Becky Rasmussen, CEO of Call to Freedom in Sioux Falls. To parents or guardians of small children, our interview today is an adult topic, and the material may not be safe for little ears. Welcome to Closer Look, Becky.
Thanks for having me, Becky. We look forward to the conversation.
Yes, this is a very interesting and important topic to talk about. You know, the term human trafficking is bandied about these days, but what's the actual definition?
Human trafficking is the use of force, fraud, or coercion to exploit somebody for either sex or labor. Unless you're under the age of 18, in most states, like the state of South Dakota, the words force, fraud, and coercion have been removed. So you just have to prove the intent to traffic somebody if they're under the age of 18. And so that gets a little tricky because we'll talk a little bit about what that looks like as far as the manipulation process and how individuals are recruiting victims these days.
So your typical age group is under 18?
The youngest that we've served is age 6 to the age of 65 plus. And so we work with not only just children, but also youth, women, and men that we've served since opening doors at Call to Freedom. Human trafficking knows no boundaries. It affects different demographics. It affects different individuals. There isn't one type of person. It really is driven by what the demand is looking for. That trafficker who is a business person is going to recruit or begin to groom an individual to meet that demand. And so we see no boundaries as far as who's walking through the doors of Call to Freedom.
What does that grooming look like?
Yeah, grooming, what we call not only grooming, but a manipulation process. And manipulation really is somebody who has targeted an individual with a vulnerability. That vulnerability could be that maybe their parents have just gone through a divorce, or maybe a young lady is vulnerable because she's homeless. Or you have a man who is a foreign national and is coming to this country looking for a better life. All those individuals have some kind of vulnerability that traffickers prey upon. And so in that grooming process, they identify a vulnerable individual that can essentially meet the need to fulfill that demand. And once they identify that individual, we've had clients that have been pulled into trafficking in less than a month, and we've had individuals that have been in a relationship with their trafficker in some form or fashion for up to 6 months to a year before they're pulled into full trafficking situations. And so in that process, you have a lot of what we call love bombing, very similar to a domestic violence where they break that individual down. It could be words that they're using. It could be physical force. It could also be where they're controlling their basic needs. It could be where they have their personal identification. They're controlling where they live. But ultimately, what that individual wants to do is he wants to control that individual to do the work of trafficking for them and think that they're a willing participant. And so depending on the vulnerability of that individual, it really depends on how long that grooming process or that targeting manipulation process will last.
We often think of human trafficking occurring across the pond in another country. How big is the problem here in our nation and specifically in Sioux Falls?
You know, I don't think have even scratched the surface of how many individuals are impacted by human trafficking within our communities, not only in South Dakota, but across the United States. It's a $150 billion industry. It is the fastest growing criminal activity in the world right now. But it's also the one of the least recognized because of the lack of education. It's fairly new to the federal statute, early 2000s. And essentially what that means is human trafficking thrives in the darkness. And if we're not talking about that and doing prevention, intervention, or education on the topic, those individuals that are facilitating this really have the ability to have no boundaries and continue to do it. But what we're seeing in South Dakota, Call to Freedom opened their doors in early 2016. And as of date, we've served over 1,200 individuals that have walked through the doors of Call to Freedom. And those numbers continue to grow from anywhere to 30 to 42% increases every year. And we haven't even scratched the surface of how many individuals. On a national level, there is a stat that less than 1% of victims are ever identified. And there's a lot of reasons for that. As I talked about manipulation and, you know, that coercion piece, those individuals sometimes don't even recognize that they're being trafficked. They feel like I made that choice, or I'm here by my own choice, when actually they've been manipulated into, you know, those choices that that trafficker is forcing upon them. And so it's really important for our emergency departments, also our domestic violence shelters, those first responders that are in our community to get trained. And that's because a lot of times trafficking victims don't self-identify. And we have more that's happening within our communities than we realize. We have 90 and 29 going through our communities in the state of South Dakota, which brings transit trafficking.
Are there different kinds of trafficking?
Another form of trafficking is what we call familial trafficking. And those are parents that are trafficking their own children, a boyfriend, girlfriend, aunt, or uncle. In the state of South Dakota, we have 6 of the poorest counties in the United States located in South Dakota, which brings another dynamic: poverty. And trafficking thrives in poverty situations. And so a lot of people are just surviving today. And traffickers have come and found vulnerable individuals in poverty or in maybe a drug addiction situation and have introduced to them, well, if you sell me your child, I will meet your basic needs. I will pay your rent. I will meet your drug addiction. And then the familial trafficking begins. And that one's really hard to identify because the person that that victim trusts the most is introducing them to this lifestyle. And a lot of times we're getting those individuals that have been familial trafficked in their 20s or 30s because we've trained a domestic violence shelter, or we've trained child protection services, or we've trained law enforcement to better identify and ask the right questions. And it's amazing in that healing process with a familial trafficking victim, when they realize that they were a victim of a crime, that it wasn't their choice, something switches in their healing process. And so I really want to encourage, we don't even know the amount of people who are affected by this because of those numbers and the lack of education. So really, I think there's a lot of work that we need to continue to do. There's a lot of positive work that has happened, but there's also more victims out there that haven't self-identified or in these situations that don't feel like they can leave because of that forced fraud or coercion that is held over them by their trafficker. And sometimes it's one trafficker, and other rings, there are multiple individuals in that ring that are holding those individuals in those situations.
If you're just tuning in, this is Closer Look, and I'm Becky Hansen, talking with Becky Rasmussen, CEO of Call to Freedom in Sioux Falls. Our interview today is an adult topic, and the material may not be safe for little ears. Becky, you've given us some information about that manipulation piece of human trafficking. I've also heard of kids being pitted against each other, like a teenage boy getting pictures of a girl and just humiliating her by saying, you know, if you don't do this, I'm going to show this to your parents. And it puts kids just in such a terrible state. Have you heard of that as well?
Absolutely. The latest trend that we've been seeing is we call exploitation, where somebody will build a relationship and they're falsifying their identity within those situations, saying that they care about this person, building a relationship typically online. So it could be through Facebook, Instagram, it could be through a gaming site. And sometimes these individuals are not even in the United States. They're in third world countries, hired 8 hours a day to target your children. And so what they do is they build false profiles, tell them that they love them. They'll put a model-like picture on there, offer them the world, maybe make false promises saying, I can offer you a modeling job if you come here. We've also had where they begin that relationship and ask them to send explicit pictures. And those pictures could be videos or they could be nude pictures that those individuals send them, and then they begin to blackmail them. The latest trend that we've seen is really targeting young boys. not necessarily girls. And so we really need to talk about that, that human trafficking doesn't know any boundaries. If there are vulnerable victims out there, those traffickers, because this is business, are going to target them. So what has happened, with, especially with the young boys, is they will send a picture and then the blackmail begins. Get your mom's credit card, or if you don't send me this amount of money, I'm going to send them out. I'm going to send them to your parents. I'm going to exploit you. And people aren't going to believe you. They're going to believe me. As a community, we haven't really developed safe places for young boys to go. And these traffickers know that. And we're seeing a lot of increased suicides with young boys because of this illegal activity that we're experiencing through this exchange of photos. And they feel like they have nowhere to go. And so it's really important as a community that we talk about how this activity is being facilitated, but also to create safe places for young kids that are in these situations or maybe getting victimized, and that they have the ability to find resources and a place where they can disclose instead of feeling like they have no way out. And that's where hope comes in. And we want to make sure at Call to Freedom that every individual that walks to the door knows that there are people who understand these dynamics, that we're here to walk alongside each individual that might be pulled into these compromising situations and this trafficking situations, and that there are ways and people that can help navigate them out of those situations.
Do you have a success story that you can share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. We just had our community breakfast. It's our one fundraiser throughout the year that we do. And there was a young gal who had been introduced to her addiction by her trafficker. And she was pulled into a trafficking situation, but the use of force and addiction was a part of her victimization to keep her coming back. And she was in that for over 7 years that she was exploited and trafficked, and had actually ended up getting some charges within the system, drug charges, because they didn't identify what was really happening, that this woman had targeted this young girl and actually introduced her and started controlling her through drugs. And she was selling her and making money off of her. And when she got arrested, she was introduced to Call to Freedom in the system. And fast forward to today, on a long journey with support from multiple systems, not just Call to Freedom, this young gal is doing very well today. In less than a year, she has been sober. She's reconnected with her family. She's gotten out of that situation, and she shared her story at our community breakfast. And she is a walking miracle, because the level of addiction and the depth of her pain was so deep that most of the people in our system, in our judicial system, didn't think that she would recover and get out. But she did. And today she's sharing her voice to help others in that situation.
What do some of your successes look like?
We have a lot of success stories. We have individuals who identified and got referred to Call to Freedom in familial cases, and today go with me into peer and actually testify to strengthen legislation within youth services. We have individuals who bought their own first home that were in horrific situations and were introduced to us in the homeless shelters, and today they have a steady job and they got their degree and they have their own home. And so success looks different for every survivor, and their journey of success is really up to them. Our call at Call to Freedom is to walk alongside a survivor, to journey life with them, to find what their call is and their success looks like. And so we have the privilege of meeting the most amazing people that have survived horrific situations, and we get to watch God do amazing miracles through their life. And then some of them choose to share their story and some of them don't, but they continue to keep us on path of wanting to do this work every day and seeing those results and knowing that God picked the one and he went after the one and he never forgot the one. And that's what Call to Freedom is called to. We're called to go get the one that isn't getting identified in human trafficking and support them to the recovery process.
Thank you for joining us. This is Closer Look. I'm Becky Hansen with my special guest, Becky Rasmussen, CEO of Call to Freedom in Sioux Falls. Becky, where will we find out more information about Call to Freedom online?
Absolutely. You can go to calltofreedom.org. That is calltofreedom.org. On our website, you can learn about what we do as far as services. Marissa's House, which is a housing program that we house 12 women and right now currently 11 children. And we are offering supportive services, not only on the emergency side, but also on the housing side as well. And there are also volunteer opportunities that you can learn on and get registered on and view those on calltofreedom.org, as well as training. We do online training classes if you want to learn more about what we do and what human trafficking looks like within your community.
Sometimes it might be right in front of our eyes. What about you? What's your story? How does a person get into this line of work?
For Becky, it is a call. In 2015, my story is that I felt God was directing me to do something in the anti-human trafficking world, but I didn't know what. And so I had talked to a trusted pastor who said, find out the foundation that's already been laid and build from there and see where God directs you. And so I ended up serving for an organization called Tapestry International in 2015. And in an outreach that they were doing in Sturgis, South Dakota, in August of 2015, I had an encounter with a young girl named Marissa. And she was at the Sturgis rally. I just had made eye contact with her. She seemed very vulnerable. And so I approached her and just made a connection with her. We had about a 10-minute conversation. In that conversation, I had identified a very fearful young lady who wasn't telling me what was going on, but I knew something wasn't right. And at the end of that conversation, she said to me, you have no idea what kind of day I've had. You have no idea. And she ran off. I got connected with an organization that was doing search and rescue the very next day. What they would do is they would actually put together a book of a 4 to 5 state radius of missing kids. And they began to tell me that not only are kids missing, but they're also pulled into human trafficking situations, typically within 48 hours of going missing. And they handed me the book, and her picture was in the book of 117 girls aged 12 to 17. And I began to ask the question, where is she? How did she go missing? And she actually had been found in October of 2014 and then went missing again in May of 2015, which put her in this book again. And I started asking the questions, how does somebody get found and how do they go missing again? And they began to tell me that there were only 298 beds in the United States at that time, specifically for human trafficking victims. And we have a lot of domestic violence shelters, but we don't have programs that are specifically designed for human trafficking. Today, fast forward to that, we have 529 in the United States. We've barely doubled the number of beds. And I knew that God was calling me to do something. And the woman who was leading at the time at Tapestry International said, I feel like God is calling me to transition this work to you. And I prayed and I felt the same way. And so I applied for a 501c3 in October of 2015. And we got accepted in January of 2016 and opened our first office March of 2016. And we didn't have money. We started simply with volunteers and with community support. Fast forward to today, God has very much had his hand upon the work of Call to Freedom. And I say that very humbly because I know our growth comes from the one above. And we now currently have 28 positions that are full-time positions at Call to Freedom. We also have two offices. And in 2021, we opened a Marissa's House, which is a home for mothers and their children. And that was fundraised and built by the community. And so we continue to do this work because we know that it's a call and we know that God is calling us to continue to be a resource for individuals within the community.
Tell us a little bit about Marissa's House.
It is a beautiful project. I think it's probably one of the most endearing program development pieces of Call to Freedom. So we opened our first supportive housing unit in October of 2016. We were partnering with another organization and that organization had lost its funding. And I had three women that were living there in 2016, and they said, we're either going to kick them out or do you want to take over the lease? And I said, I felt like the Lord said, you're not putting them out on the street. And so we stepped out in faith and took on that lease in 2016. And their first Marissa house was actually a efficiency, not even efficiency apartment, very small. They were 7 units, and we began to offer programming to just women and women that were coming out of human trafficking situations. And as we started seeing the women do very, very well within our program, they had this deep desire because of the course of their victimization. They had lost their relationship with their children. Their children may have went into the system or went to live with a parent because they were not in good situations and had lost the rights to their children. And they were moving out and they weren't being successful when they moved out because they lacked the support for not only themselves, but also to be a family unit. And I said, you know what, we're going to build it. And we believe God came alongside us, and he did come alongside us rather. And we stepped out in faith and fundraised and built the new Marissa's home that was opened April 1st of 2021. And in that home, we now not only provide supportive apartments for women coming out of human trafficking, but also their children. And to see a woman who thought that she has lost everything in her life, that there was no hope of coming back and having a normal life, with a deep desire to want to be a mother that she didn't know how to be. Now Marissa's house provides that. We are a supportive housing unit. We have 12 apartments, 6 one-bedroom apartments, 3 three-bedrooms, and 3 two-bedroom apartments that allow mothers with their children to live with us in a supportive environment. So they have counselors, mental health. They also eventually pay rent. They're all employed. We get the children set up on childcare within school systems, but they're able to navigate not only their trauma, but also navigate being a new parent and new to parenting within Marissa's house. We've seen tremendous success when we're able to allow a parent to be in a supportive environment with their children. It has been a game changer in the recovery process for those women that have been victimized, because now they're not just in the recovery process for themselves, they're in the recovery process for their children as well. And we're excited to say that we feel like we're on a good path with Marissa's house.
What should we do if we suspect human trafficking? What should we watch for?
As a community member, I would look for a controlled environment. If somebody is fearful, doesn't make eye contact, maybe doesn't have access to their personal identification, they don't know where they're located, what state they're in, what city they're in, and maybe they don't even know what year it is at this time. Those are all signs that there is something not right in that situation. And what I would first say is don't intervene, but there is a number that connects us to law enforcement. It's the National Human Trafficking Hotline. It's called the Polaris Line, that you can call and make a report.
What's the number for the Polaris Line?
Yeah, it is 1-888-373-7888. And for emergency calls, please do 911.
Becky, you've shared a lot of information with us today that's very helpful and very important. Before we close, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I think when we work with survivors, one of the common feedback to them is when a community believes that this is happening and takes it seriously, it gives a victim of human trafficking the courage to exit that life.
I'd like to thank my guest, Becky Rasmussen, CEO of Call to Freedom in Sioux Falls. For more information on Call to Freedom, you can also email us at closerlook@klove.com. That's closerlook@klove.com. For Closer Look, I'm Becky Hansen.
This has been KLove Closer Look. Find us online at klove.com.